It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. Yesterday, the House Ways and Means Committee approved making last year's tax cuts permanent for individuals. The Congressional Joint Committee on Taxation says that the bill would raise the debt by more than $600 billion over the next decade. Last year's tax cuts are already estimated to add $1.5 trillion to the national debt. That's according to the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office. We want to find out what tax cuts 2.0 mean, and if they will even get through a vote of both houses. Representative Gwen Moore sits on the Financial Services Committee and joins us now. And we are also taking your calls, 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Congresswoman Moore, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you for having me, Carrie. Good morning.
Good morning. So Ways and Means actually voted on more than one tax bill yesterday. What did they do?
Yesterday, the Ways and Means Committee did what we called Tax Cut 2.0.
Right.
And what they want to do is make the individual tax cuts permanent. But these individual tax cuts are not for your everyday Americans, but individuals who are higher income individuals. My supposition is that they're trying to shore up support before the midterms. And I think your lead-in really spelled it out well, that it really only adds more to the deficit over 10 years.
Mm.
And it is really unclear to me whether this will be able, garner the votes on the floor.
So Paul Ryan has said he wants to bring votes to the floor, but you don't even think your Republican colleagues will vote for this?
Well, you know, as you know, there are folks who love to call themselves deficit hawks.
Hmm.
And if you're a deficit hawk, it's time to step up. We're going to talk about the consequences of the Lehman collapse at some point. But one thing we do know is that increasing debt is a threat to our economy. And this is so counterintuitive toward having a healthy economy that there's got to be some sort of dissension within the Republican conference, I think.
So you just said that this is to shore up their donors. So are there people who are putting this forward, do you think, simply to signal their donors and they're not really counting on getting it through necessarily?
Well, you know, it's hard to guess because,
right,
like I said, it's so counterintuitive for number one, the health of our economy. And secondly, you know, as we have seen the campaign, rely on these tax cuts in terms of shoring up votes for the midterm, they haven't been that popular.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing, isn't it? Polls have shown that they are not that popular even among average Americans. We're talking to Congresswoman Gwen Moore, who is from the 4th District, which encompasses Milwaukee. And we're taking your calls for Congresswoman Moore, 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org. Or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. So, yes, right now I do want to get to the Lehman Brothers collapse and the financial crisis. You are on the Financial Services Subcommittee. This is the 10th anniversary of that crisis. What have we learned from this crisis, and are we doing anything to stop it in the future?
Oh, my God, Carrie. I remember the day that Hank Paulson showed up saying, give us $700 billion or else. The global economy is going to collapse. And, of course, my first instinct was to say, oh, heck, no, I'm not doing this. But I realized that not only was this a risk to our economy, but this was a threat to the global economy. And we had no choice. And I think, I sat there on the financial services panel and we put together Dodd-Frank. And we put some guardrails around the economy, tried to put together an orderly liquidation facility so that banks could unwind safely without being a systemic risk. We tried to put a regulatory regime in place. But we have seen a very systemic deconstruction of of Dodd-Frank under Republicans, which I think is frightening. When you look across the pond at Europe, they seem to have learned a little bit more than we have in terms of, you know, being concerned about risk and keeping a regulatory regime in place. But we have seen this Republican conference sort of try to deconstruct the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, raise the threshold at which banks can operate. And, of course, this debt, even the actions yesterday of the Ways and Means Committee that thrust us further into debt, we know historically our threats long term. We've seen it over the course of our history here in the United States, that when you have a lot of debt, when you have a lot of income inequality and lowered regulatory regimen, that it is it's just the perfect cauldron for a storm.
So walk me through this. How does having more debt lead to a financial crisis?
Well, I mean, more debt leads to a financial crisis because you have less money being used for productive purposes. I mean, you literally find yourself paying off monies that are owed.
Right, loans.
Right, right. Not just loans, but just the cost of borrowing.
Right.
It goes toward the cost of borrowing rather than building a new capital, making capital improvements, giving higher wages, making investments. It's just paid toward the debt, paying down the debt.
So we're not rebuilding bridges instead?
We're not rebuilding bridges. We are simply paying for the cost of borrowing.
So what do you say to people who say, look, I got a tax cut and it's you know, $100 more a year that's in my paycheck, and I like that, so I want more tax cuts. What do you say to them?
Well, I tell you, $100 a month is real money to some, a
right.
year.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure that'll be helpful around Christmas time. To have that $100, and I'm not, you know, as a woman who raised three children primarily by herself, I'm not sneezing at even a small amount of money. I mean, that's lunch money, that's gas in your car to get to work every week. But there's a couple of things people need to know. First of all, inflation will definitely eat up any raise that people have. Secondly, the raise that you get from these tax cuts are certainly not going to offset other expenses that you'll get. For example, I'm expecting fully in October for everybody's health care costs to jump, to leap because of things that we have done to the Affordable Care Act and sort of the misalignment of health care interests. Inflation, just regular inflation. And last but not least, the work that the Ways and Means Committee did yesterday does not provide permanent tax cuts for the folks we're talking about now. Those individuals.
Okay, we're gonna come back to that in a moment. We're checking in with Congresswoman Gwen Moore, who represents the 4th District in Wisconsin. We're taking your calls, 800-642-1234. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. Congress is pretty busy these days trying to pass legislation before the midterm elections in November. We're checking in with Congresswoman Gwen Moore about what is likely to come out of the House in the next month or so. And we're taking your calls, 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas at WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. So, Congresswoman Moore, you were talking a moment ago about the fact that what came out of Ways and Means yesterday does not provide a tax cut for everybody, for all incomes. What incomes does it provide a tax cut for?
Well, it provides a tax cut for the rich, and it provides them with the opportunity to give themselves stock buybacks and dividends. It favors that kind of income versus earned income.
I see.
Right. Adding insult to injury, I mean, our president announced that he's thinking of this strongly about allowing these investors to factor in inflation when calculating their capital gains tax liability. And it gives them another $102 billion tax cut over 10 years, and not one penny of it is any kind of productive use in the economy. It's just, it's a numbers game. Oh, you get to calculate in inflation. And so 90% of the benefits of this $100 billion capital gains tax cut would just go to the top 1%. The Ways and Means Committee, I'm not familiar with all the work that they did because I am an aspirational member of that committee. I'm not on that committee yet. But when they were tinkering around with the tax cuts, there was an elimination of the middle income. They tinkered around by lowering and raising some tax brackets,
mm-hmm.
and that did not inure to the benefit of the lowest income people.
Right,
as they moved tax categories around, and so I am good. I'm really, really eager to see the readout from that once it hits the floor.
I want to move on right now to talk about the Farm Bill. We've done a lot of reporting on this here. It expires at the end of this month. There are two sides to this Farm Bill. There are farmers who need government help in shoring up their industry. And then there are SNAP benefits, which generally have been going together. And there are some people in the in Congress who want to eliminate the SNAP benefits. What say you about this Farm Bill?
Well, I think the magic of the Farm Bill historically has been that that you bring farmers to the table and you bring people to the table and you work things out. And of course, there continues to be an effort to separate farmers from beneficiaries of SNAP, the food stamp program. And of course, that is catastrophic. We're seeing that in these negotiations. Sean Duffy from Wisconsin is on the conference committee for the Farm Bill. The bill is stalled.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons that it's stalled is because these conservative lawmakers continue to focus on work requirements, drug testing, these sort of behavioral modification programs in order for people to receive food benefits. That forestalls any discussion of lowering these huge tax subsidies to wealthy farmers. They can't even get to the discussion of that.
Mm.
And so it's stalled out basically on this behavioral modification for people. And just let me tell you this. Wisconsin has not recovered as well as other states since the collapse. And, you know, you often hear our governor and the president, but our governor talk about how we've had the lowest unemployment rate in history or since blah, blah, blah. And the reality is that wages have not only been flat, but they've actually decreased when you look at inflation and other factors. And while we might have the lowest unemployment rate, it is not sustainable. There is not a house in Wisconsin, a two-bedroom apartment house anywhere in the state of Wisconsin that's a decent housing that you can afford off of a minimum wage job. And so it's not a matter of people not working. People cannot afford food and transportation and child care, medical care, off of these lowered wages. And so it is a total distraction to say, well, we're just going to make people work. People are working.
Okay, so when you talk to your colleague, Congressman Duffy, who says that this farm bill is going to get people to work and so that they can changing the SNAP benefits will get people to work and because they're capable adults, and you say to him, people are working and they're not making enough, what does he say back to you?
Well, you know, it's interesting that you ask that because I've written him a letter and said to him, you know, Representative Duffy, I mean, there are in Wisconsin, there will be 76,000 people who will lose SNAP benefits under your proposal, 23,000 of them kids. And guess what? They're not all in the 4th Congressional District of Wisconsin. You know, they're in your district. In your district, you have people who rely on SNAP in the 7th Congressional District of Wisconsin. I mean, it is a very, very needy community. Mm. So I try to bring it home to him that it's not just those people in Milwaukee. It's folks in your district as well. And I think that...
Did he respond?
No, he did not respond to my letter.
So I want to move on to talking about how this applies to school lunches. The Farm Bill specifically applies to school lunches. Why should we pay attention to this?
We should definitely pay attention to school lunches and school breakfast. I think that our colleagues have fought against, I mean, again, it's an ideological battle. Their notion that kids ought to eat breakfast at home and parents ought to take primary responsibility for feeding their children. We don't live in the same sort of environment we've lived in. Parents are off to one of those jobs at 7 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. And I think breakfast and lunch at school improves academic performance. It improves kids' health. And there's really not any debate about that. And it is an investment in our children that pays us back 20-fold. It's immeasurable. And why we should put our children, who by definition, if they're school age, are dependent children, why we should lay them on the altar of sacrifice for ideology is just mind-boggling. And so I am hoping, Carrie, you know, to be able to convince people in Wisconsin and across the nation that investments in food are long-term investments that really will bring us the kind of harvest that we want to see. You know, I lived on food stamps for a period of my life, me and my little girl, and I say it every time the subject comes up. I'm so grateful to the taxpayers for feeding me and my little girl, and both of us give back tremendously. My daughter works with special needs children in our school system. I represent people in Congress. We both pay lots of taxes. And so, you know, hopefully the taxpayers have gotten those fish sticks and chicken nuggets back.
Right. I want to end today by talking about Hurricane Florence. What do you know and that is happening, and how is the government planning to respond to this? Are you satisfied here?
Well, you know, I'm pretty frightened about Florence. When you consider the response, the rhetoric, at least, of the president in just being tone deaf to what happened in Maria with Puerto Rico, to see...
I should note that the president said that it was a total success, that the cleanup was a total success in Puerto Rico.
That's right, it was a total success.
3,000 people didn't die.
Right, and 3,000 people did not die, that, you know, that you know, Democrats just wanted to make him look bad. I talked to my colleague, Congresswoman Plaskett from the Virgin Islands. She says that they're still devastated in the U.S. Virgin Islands. And so, you know, I'm concerned about what are the metrics for success here?
We have been talking to Congresswoman Gwen Moore. She represents Wisconsin's 4th District that covers the Milwaukee area. Congresswoman Moore, I wish we had more time. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, until we meet again, Carrie.
Thank you. We're inviting Wisconsin members of Congress to talk about current issues on the morning show. It's the Ideas Network.